Welcome, everybody, to the Mod Pod. I'm your host, Avi Asizis, a.k.a. Actively Lazy, and I am going to have on with me in a few minutes my co-host, Paul Birdsall. I think we all know what today's show is about, and there's no need to beat around the bush, but unless you were in a coma, you heard or saw the things going on at Capitol Hill just the other day when we were supposed to be doing the certification process in Congress. I had made a joke on our last episode about this.
Execute Order 66.
So it's a Star Wars reference to basically when Palpatine pretty much turned on the Jedi and had the stormtroopers basically kill everybody, like, or droids. They were protected by, like, droids and doing missions and stuff, and so they executed Order 66, and everybody got turned on and pretty much started the process of destroying the Jedi Order. So it was just a crude joke, which might have been kind of true. Paul, I mean, we're going to talk about what we can. We can't cover everything. I don't want this podcast to be a tool for spreading conspiracy theories. So I'm going to try to be logical about everything. But I know there's a lot of people out there on both sides that question the events that took place this past week. So I guess we can start with the fact that I was able to more or less make a joke but predict that something was going to happen, and yet for some reason the police presence in D.C. was lacking that day.
That's an understatement.
I mean, it is concerning. It's concerning that they didn't anticipate a crowd that large. I mean, Trump has drawn large crowds of supporters at every rally, everywhere he's went. I mean, he always talks about the large crowds, and well, hell, you can see there are large crowds. The Daily Show makes fun of it all the time. The one guy goes to all the events and interviews people, but I mean, the support is ridiculous, and not ridiculous in the way that it's ridiculous, but I'm just saying, like, it's definitely a lot of support. There's also the fact that it's blatantly obvious, or it was blatantly obvious, that there was going to be a lot of people there. I mean, they could have just looked at flight plans for all that much. I mean, you just knew there was going to be a large crowd. It didn't seem like anybody wanted to make any adjustments to that. And here we are. So we can start at the very beginning. The Congress got together to certify the votes. I will clear this up for the last time. I think it's very obvious and clear, and you can Google it, look it up. I mean, read the Constitution yourself if you're into that thing. But the vice president cannot change the certification process. Like, he doesn't actually have any say in the process. He's just a glorified, like, moderator. That's it. So this notion that Mike Pence could have done anything is just completely false. It's one of the main things that really annoys me about Trump's narrative from his speech and just in general from what people are saying, like supporters that get interviewed that we've seen on, like, YouTube and people who were on the ground, like, doing, like, beat writer reporting and things like that. Mike Pence should not have any fault in how this turned out as far as the certifications of the state's votes. He can't do anything about that. He literally cannot do anything about that. Pence told Trump that. It was reported that he told Trump that. And essentially, I mean, Trump was pretty much done with him after that. I would imagine Trump probably told him that he's not trying to hear any of that, and that he needed to do something, because in his speech, he kind of implied that there was expectations that Mike was going to help them out. I mean, hell, he even sent out a tweet that, you know, if Mike Pence help basically helps us out, we can really change this thing around. And Pence didn't, and then all hell broke loose, basically.
Well, keep in mind, too, with what Pence's role, because it's funny you mentioned this, they were saying the certification process itself literally takes about 30 minutes for the most part. You know, what Pence does is he basically counts up the electoral votes from each state, and if there is an objection to the electoral vote result in a particular state, the objection is stated. They go into both houses of Congress and they debate it. Pence's job is almost entirely ceremonial. It's just to tally everything up. The results themselves have, I mean, this is just finalizing all the things that have come up. What really, I think, struck out to me, and obviously I think we'll probably get into this a little bit down the line, is that this goes beyond trying to put the burden on Pence, you know, when it comes to having a last-ditch effort to overturn this election, because he's still been calling into Georgia, expressing his dissatisfaction with the, you know, I think the attorney general there for not doing enough to investigate fraud and for them not finding those votes and this, this, and that. But he, in this last-ditch effort, was trying to put everything on Pence, which, as you said, is not only unfair, but he put Pence's life in danger that day. Like, I don't like Mike Pence. I don't trust the man. Hell, there are people in his home state of Indiana who don't like him. Like, Trump's vice presidential, you know, pitch to him was basically his chance to sustain his political career, which in his home state was tanking. But he put that man's life in danger. Like, I can't overstate that enough. That, like, he put Pence in a position where he might actually get killed. And I don't think there's really anything that can repeat that at this point.
Yeah, I don't think – so part of my issue with this entire event and the actions and everything that's been going on, and you know, I've said this probably 2-3 episodes straight, we still coddle Trump. We still coddle Donald Trump. A grown man still gets coddled by his peers, by his supporters, by just people in general. This is an adult, man. If you don't know that your words carry weight at this point, when you brag about your crowd size, you brag about the millions and millions of people who support you, you can clearly see what they say online and things like that. If you don't understand the or you can't comprehend the power in your voice as president of the United States, as Donald Trump right now, then we probably have a bigger problem on our hands. And my issue with everything that took place really came full circle when the reports came out that while Mike Pence is basically sheltered in place for safety, he was calling Tommy Tuberville to see if he could, you know, challenge in the Senate. Like, what in the world, man? Like, that really bothered me. And it didn't bother me because, like, from a political sense, it bothered me as a person. Like, this is your right-hand man. Mike Pence has stood beside Trump this entire time. Even when a lot of us looked at this man like, there's no way you could possibly be repeating this nonsense. Like, he has not wavered. He literally stood with Trump until the very, very end when it finally came time for him to essentially pick between Trump and America, and he chose America. And I know people probably think that's cliche, but I was telling somebody earlier today, like, your duty is to the Constitution. If you're vice president, senator, House of Representatives, president, doesn't matter. At the end of the day, your duty is to the Constitution. This notion that this was an illegal election and things like that is not substantiated. Like, there's no evidence supporting that. There's fringe, like, things online and everything, but when they go to court, and that's public record. You can look it up. It's public record. The things that they try to prove in court or their arguments in court are public record. There's nothing there. Absolutely nothing there. And people keep talking about these Dominion machines and things like that. They're suing the crazy girl. What is it, Powell is her name? They're suing this lady for over $1 billion. Does that sound like something that somebody that's guilty or is running faulty equipment or messing with votes would do? They're suing her for $1 billion. It's a defamation suit for $1 billion. I don't know if I've ever seen a number that high, but I think it's just to kind of send the message. Like, obviously they can't get to the president, but they can definitely get to her. And it's the echo chamber that a lot of his supporters are in that has kind of made this a very volatile and dangerous situation in our country. And Trump carries some blame. Democrats carry some blame because they basically egged him on. And I sent you that clip. I don't even think I explained it, but I'm pretty sure you put it together. But The Dark Knight, when Alfred is explaining to Batman, like, Batman's trying to figure out, how do I stop the Joker? And Alfred explains how they had a bandit who was stealing stuff. And when they finally caught the bandit, they realized that he wasn't even keeping the things he was stealing. He was giving it away. And Batman was basically like, well, why the hell was he stealing it? And Alfred was like, no reason at all. Some people just literally are that crazy. Now, I'm not saying Trump is that crazy, but I'm saying I don't think he really has the end game that people think he has. I really think he's living in the moment. He has no plan. And at the end of the day, he doesn't care. It's all about him. And he proved that to me personally. He proved that to me when he didn't check on Mike Pence at all, man. Like, even if you don't want to give him blame for inciting the riot or the insurrection or whatever, we can take all that out. We're not putting any blame. We're talking about a man who stood by you from day fucking one. You see what's going on TV. You're down the street. You're down the street. And you see what's going on, and you don't like overreact and send the National Guard or something. Like, no, like, you call Tommy Tuberville, and they didn't even call the right person, but you basically continue to try to pursue this ridiculous notion that the election was rigged.
Well, I think, first off, even though the shock for me about putting Mike Pence's life in danger was definitely pretty up there, the way he treated Pence is actually pretty much par for the course for Trump, because I've read articles that have talked about this, is that your association with him, that's just the way he uses people. You know, if you support him or if you're against him, it doesn't matter. The minute you're in contact with him and you're brought into his orbit, you are essentially a tool to be used by him to get as much out as possible before you're ultimately expendable. And the perfect example of that, as we've talked about, is Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions was the first major politician to legitimize his, you know, Republican primary run. And, you know, he got rewarded with the position of Attorney General, but he recused himself from an investigation that he rightfully should have recused himself from, and Trump turned on him. That's just how he deals with people. But this is the thing I think we need to think about Trump, and this was the discussion I was actually having. And you're going to laugh, I think, at the direction I'm going with this, but bear with me. Did you ever see the movie version they did of Les Miserables?
No.
So there's a scene or a portion in there. It takes place during one of the revolutions in France, but there's a scene in there where they're basically, there's a prominent political figure who dies, and as his funeral carriage is going through the street, the students who, you know, looked up to this particular politician and his ideals, who represented the people, they kind of all coagulate together. There's a big song basically about, you know, hearing the anger that the people have in overthrowing the government. That's what those protests, and you see basically these soldiers joining them, and they go to the barricades and they make this huge stand against, you know, this government that wasn't working for them. That's what those protesters view themselves as. Not just these champions of the people, but that they're in some film, you know, that they're in a movie or a TV show, and they're the protagonists who are making this heroic stand. It's all a delusion. Donald Trump fits into that mold perfectly because that's who he's been. He is somebody whose whole persona was crafted on a lie and perfected through mainstream media and pop culture. And it's not that he doesn't understand that his words have weight. I think he does. What he doesn't understand is that you can only control situations and people to a certain point. Right now, his whole demeanor changed within 24 hours of the riot because I think he didn't even quite then appreciate how much and how dangerous a territory he was actually wading in. In the same way that his supporters who actually broke into the Capitol now are starting to realize just how serious what they did was. Like, my dad was reading off articles today about some of the Trump supporters who were talking about how a whole bunch of them had actually been put, you know, on no-fly list and were stranded in D.C. and were being called traitors, and it was coming as a huge shock to them. There has been a delusion that Trump has brought these people in that is something really that has been crafted, that would have been crafted somewhere out of Hollywood, where it's like, you guys don't understand, this is reality. Like, this is a post-9/11 government that has even better capabilities of tracking you down. Like, you're not getting away with it. However smart you think you are, or however clever, you're not getting away with it. Like, Trump, I think now, even when they were talking about his ban on Twitter, you know, he and I guess his personal, you know, the White House counsel had been talking to him and Jared Kushner about moving their platform to Parler instead of Twitter at one point. But Kushner advised against it because, like Trump, he thought that he had intimidated those guys enough, or was intimidating enough, that they would never ban him. And his ban came as a complete shock to him and pissed him off. Like, he's now starting to see where it's like, dude, you crossed a huge line. Like, you took this and you got them riled up. But what you don't understand is they took it beyond probably where you were even intending it to go. He was probably just wanting the whole process disrupted, and he probably had this fanciful idea that, you know, the mere presence of his supporters would intimidate everybody to do that, when it's like, that's not how that works. That's fiction. You're living in a fantasy world. You literally just incited people to try to stage essentially a coup on your behalf. And I don't think he really believed it was ever going to get to that point. But now that it has, it's like, dude, this isn't like another one of your rallies where, you know, you get everybody riled up and everybody goes home. If the evacuation hadn't gone off, if there are people who stepped up who, you know, didn't, I mean, if those people didn't step up and you had actually gotten access to those congressmen, they weren't going to go home peacefully. They were going to hold them hostage. A bunch of them had guns. One of them bragged that he was going to put a bullet in Nancy Pelosi's head on camera. Like, this was a coup. This was not a protest. Hell, this wasn't even a riot. This was an attempt at an overthrow or an intimidation of the government. And I don't think Trump really appreciates that just yet. Like, I think he's starting to get it, but I don't even think he or the supporters who participate in this understand just what you know, red area they just walked into.
Yeah, and I think that I really hate to I really hate to put it on him, but now that I think about presidential elections and debates and primaries from the time I was a child until now, the language definitely changed, the attitude, the energy definitely changed when Trump got involved in politics. And people embraced that because he was brash and he told it like it was and this and that, you know, like it was, that was the thing. And the Republicans got behind him. You know, in our first couple of episodes, I pleaded and screamed at the top of my lungs that they needed to take their party back because this guy was just, he wasn't it, man. Like, Trump isn't, he's not the leader that people think he is, you know? And he has incited and empowered the wrong type of people. And they're not all his supporters. Some of them are just opportunistic people. Like, I mean, for everything they say about Antifa, there's always agents of chaos when things go crazy, when order is not in place. And I hate to sound like that, but it's true. If you don't have structure, you don't have rules, you don't have police, not necessarily like actual police, but if there's not somebody there to keep people accountable, if it's literally a lawless land, there's no telling what can happen. And at that particular moment, when those people went into that Capitol, man, that's exactly how they were acting, you know? And not everybody was there. We've seen some goofy stuff, man. Some people was just there, just hype off of the emotion, you know? And then there was others who really had bad intentions. And that's the thing that bothers me, is that people on the Trump supporting side don't want to be grouped in with those nutcases. But it's the same thing I always say to racists, like people who back people that say racist things. If you don't want to be called racist, don't support a racist. If you don't want to be called a nutcase like the rest of these people, then speak out on it. Like, and that goes both ways. It's not just a far right thing or a Republican thing. That goes for the Democratic Party too. But the issue that we have right now is a Republican issue, because the party has a very serious crisis on their hand. This could potentially destroy their party. They're basically being held hostage by Trump. If you listen to Trump Jr.'s speech before Donald Trump came up there and Giuliani came up there, they're essentially threatening the party. Like, hey, you either back my dad or else. And they're threatening them with basically destroying their political career, because as Trump has clearly shown, like, he loves bragging about the people that he backed, that he got into office. And it's a mob mentality, if I'm free to say that. Trump specifically talked about how he got Kemp elected. They beat Stacey Abrams. And essentially, he's like, yo, I got you in office. You owe me a favor. You owe me a solid. You guys are Republicans. You work for me, basically. Why can't you find my 11,000 votes? Or why can't you find the fraud? Like, that's essentially what that call was, you know? Like, it was a very mob-type mentality. And I'm not trying to be extreme about it. It really gave off the vibe. Like, look, I did you a favor. Do you know who you're talking to? This is the president. I'm the head of the Republican Party. You're Republican. And that's also part of the argument for the other side, is that how could this not be legitimate if everything that you're complaining about is essentially from Republican heads of state? Like the Pennsylvania stuff. He was talking about the Pennsylvania, like their voting law that apparently changed, that allowed them to essentially count votes that were any other time not being able to be counted. the one of their House of Representatives delegates stood up. I think he was Democratic, but he stood up and said, like, look, this was a Republican-backed law in a Republican-led state that was approved by a Republican-dominant legislator, and Republicans won their respective parts of the state except for Trump. And the real issue here is that he wasn't as popular a Republican as he thought he was. And that is essentially what I was saying, too, prior to, you know, the runoff in Georgia, is that Republican Party did great. They still technically were in control of the Senate at the time, as long as they won the runoff, and they gained seats in the House.
And so, the thing is, I was going to say, with Trump, though, it's because you're absolutely right about Don Jr. Don Jr., I know, and I've heard rumor about this, is that he's making a play for the head of the Republican National Committee. And it's very clear that they want to get themselves embroiled in that. But what you're hearing with Trump is that Trump really, again, when people talk from the beginning about how Trump was going to run America like he runs his business, that's how he does business. That's how he does it. But what he doesn't understand, especially when you look at the fact that a bunch of his lawsuits that he filed about invalidating votes were struck down by some of the judges that he appointed, he doesn't understand that it's like it doesn't quite work the way it does when you promote somebody at a business. You hold a lot more leverage then. Like when you appoint a judge, that judge is appointed for life. They're supposed to be free of any kind of political affiliations. They're allowed to rule on things based on the case at hand. You know, politicians, you know, even if you help get them elected, they still have to answer not only to their constituents, but they still have a couple years that they are able to run things. So it's like you can't bully them the same way without resorting to tactics that can seriously get you into trouble. Hence what you see with the riots, where it's like he was legitimately trying to intimidate them, but what he doesn't understand is, and I mean, again, he wasn't the only one speaking who got them riled up. You know, Don Jr. was there, Rudy Giuliani's there, that kid Madison Crowley, the 24-year-old Republican representative from North Carolina, who a bunch of Democrats in that area are reaching out to Nancy Pelosi, basically saying that he should be expelled for his actions. Like, what's a little bit coming out of this whole thing that's a little bit on the positive side for me is that you're seeing people speaking out in the home state. Like, obviously, you know, they're probably coming from more Democratic areas, but the voices are being amplified where it's like not only is this not acceptable, but the people who enable this type of stuff need to be held accountable for it. But it all goes back to Trump, because Trump has been planting the seed of this type of discourse from the beginning of the year. He was insinuating this stuff as far back as 2016, that anything that he loses in a legitimate election is automatically done by fraud. His loss to Hillary Clinton on the popular vote, a bunch of people miscast. His loss in both the popular vote and the Electoral College, the same thing. He has been ingraining this in his supporters' brain for years. And this is what it comes to fruition. And it's just, to me, what you had said earlier about how they coddle Trump and stuff like that, like, it's now I'm curious to see what's going to happen in the remaining, you know, time that he has, because this is, like, it's unacceptable. And the coddling, if you're ever going to stop it, now would be a hell of a good time.
So, I mean, you're right about what you were saying. I mean, there's articles back in 2016 where he just flat out said, like, I'll accept the results if I win. Like, it's kind of comical. Like, this is a grown man. Like, what in the – if you win. Like Mitt Romney said. Like, Mitt Romney said, like, bro, I've already lost. Trust me, it's not fun, but here I am, you know? Like, and I respected him for that, for his speech that he gave – when they reconvene. And he was right. Like, you know, like at some point you gotta let this go. You gotta let this, it is a dangerous game that he has played, that his supporters have played. Not the citizens. I'm talking about the other people in the government offices and stuff, that they have enabled this and played along, and everybody's went along with it for so long, and now it's at a boiling point, and people are so confused that if you ask me, if we're talking about democracy, and you know, I said this a couple shows ago, that you know, we've always been the basically people to push it on everybody else. Democracy, democracy, democracy. Like, how can this be the picture of democracy when the head of our government is telling people and telling the world repeatedly that the elections are fraud, and our, the way we count votes is fraud, and this isn't fair, and it, he's complete, he's like sowed so many seeds of mistrust in the process. I think that's more detrimental than sowing seeds of mistrust in like the government in general. Like, people already naturally don't trust the government, but now you're telling them don't trust the process too. What are we here for, you know? And now you've got this ragtag group of nutcases that keep calling themselves patriots and talking about civil war and a revolution and this and that. Like, what the fuck are you? Revolution of what? To what? What do we have going on the revolution for? That you need a civil war for? Like, what are you talking about, bro? What are you talking about? We're in the middle of a fucking pandemic, and you guys are bitching about an election? Who the fuck cares who's in charge? As long as they help us get out of the pandemic and get the economy going right. I just sat here and watched the same motherfuckers that complained and made fun of all the nutcases from 2016 and calling them snowflakes act the exact same way. And took it a step further and went to the Capitol building. And like, what are we doing as a country, man? I keep telling people we're turning into a third world country, and we got all these people talking about communism, socialism, and fucking Antifa. Like, what? Somebody make sense to me, yo.
Well, it's so funny that you mentioned the fact about, you know, the whole process with people wanting to not be associated with the worst parts of the party. Now, I know when it came to, you know, the murder of George Floyd and everything that came out with Black Lives Matter, you were more engaging with, you know, engaging with people online at a greater frequency than I was. So you probably heard a lot more of the BS arguments than I did. But I think what's so interesting is that people are bringing that up now as a way to justify. Like, I sent you the thing today that talked about how, you know, the guy was basically trying to show how there was more in common with the Black Lives Matter protest and the protests that happened on Capitol Hill, as if both the destruction that happened as a result of those and the end results were ultimately rooted in similar causes. And it's like those types of arguments are coming from people who I think voted for Trump in 2016 for reasons that had nothing to do with racist sentiment, that had nothing to do with white supremacy, but that had literally everything to do with the fact that there was a government in place that wasn't working for them, the communities were dying, and they voted for him again in 2020 with that same belief that Biden was just basically another part of that same governmental system that got him in the situation in the first place. But now they're seeing what's happening and going, oh God, like, we didn't sign up for this. And they don't seem to understand that trying to draw parallels between the Black Lives Matter protests and this, and trying to find some way to call what happened on Wednesday as anything other than a goddamn insurrection, you are enabling the crazier parts of that movement. You're not helping. You can be somebody who voted for Trump in 2016 for reasons about the way the federal government was operating wasn't working for you, and you really wanted to see some kind of shakeup, you can be that person who voted for him in 2016 and effing condemn what happened on Wednesday. You can do both, and you have to do both. You cannot draw parallels. There are no parallels between the Black Lives Matter protests and what happened there. It's to quote Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction, it's not the same, like, it's not the same ballpark. It's not even the same sport. Like, you are comparing two totally different things, and you are enabling a very dangerous sentiment by trying to put what happened on Wednesday in any sort of positive or relatable light. That's my opinion. The line that was crossed on Wednesday is one that should never be crossed, and it's one that you can never come back from. And I don't think people understand that enough.
Yeah, so as a black man, I'll go ahead and just let people know straight up, like, there ain't nothing, absolutely nothing comparable to what Black Lives Matter was even trying to get across as far as the message. Even in the midst of the chaos that some of those rallies turned into riots and some of the dumb shit that people were doing, like burning police cars and things like that, at no point was there ever a talk of overthrowing like Congress or the actual government, like the process.
Or murdering the politicians.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about attacking the Constitution, attacking democracy. Like, this is democracy. That's one of the things that annoys me, too, is that it seems like the people are confused about what side they're really on. Like, they think they're fighting for this good side. In actuality, they're the villains. Like, that's like, mm-hmm. You're the ones who are the traitors. Like, you're disrupting the process that, by all accounts, is legal. You're the traitors. Like, what are you talking about? You're not a patriot. That's not patriotic. You're undoing everything that you claim you stand up for. But, yeah, the comparison to Black Lives Matter, it's just not, man. Like, that's not what Black Lives Matter was going after, man. Like, they don't want anything to do with Congress or as far as like storming into the Capitol and forcing them to change laws or anything like that. Like, it was never that extreme. When they came to the cities, like when they came to DC, like it got tense at times, but again, like just like the temperature was totally different, man. Totally different, you know?
Well, and when you look at the end games, too, like one of the things that I've been seeing a lot of and part of this whole justification for these particular riots on Wednesday that was coming up was not only, you know, the parallels between the Black Lives Matter, but also talking about how there's been, you know, quote-unquote violent rhetoric from the Democrats for a long time, where during the Black Lives Matter protest, you know, Kamala Harris was talking about how the protests need to continue, and Nancy Pelosi was quoted as saying that she is surprised that, like, an actual, like, insurrection or, like, revolt hasn't happened with the things that these communities experience. And you can interpret that any way you want to, but you have to look at what that particular rhetoric led to. Like, yes, there were neighborhoods or buildings or businesses that were looted or damaged and stuff like that during Black Lives Matter. But the thing is, a lot of those places were insured. They'll recover. How many police officer casualties do you remember from those Black Lives Matter protests? I'm pretty sure it's zero. I don't recall any cops actually getting killed during any of those protests. Do you?
No, I honestly, other than the, and it could just be because it was the only one that people really paid attention to. Other than the one when the boy pulled out the gun and shot those people, I don't recall people. I know there was like some injuries from time to time, but I don't recall anybody really dying. I went to the ones here in Richmond a couple times, and I had a friend who was ground zero at every Black Lives Matter event or every protest at the time, and he was go on live feed, and he's been featured in the New York Times, I believe. And nah, it wasn't anything like people like think it is. Like the message of Black Lives Matter, as far as the protests were going after all the stuff that happened this summer, the message this summer had nothing to do with violence. As far as
I meant to tell you, this is something that came out, not to interject, but did you see the Drew Brees tweet that got deleted? Drew Brees is starting to wade in very unfriendly waters, man.
What did he say this time?
He didn't say anything. There was a shirt that he was wearing that said hashtag say her name. Now, if you recall, that was in reference when a lot of the NFL and NBA players were wearing it in reference to Breonna Taylor, right? Well, what they're thinking, and the reason it got deleted, is because he was wearing it for the Air Force veteran who got killed during the riot.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man. And again, what bothers me so much about, first off, even drawing a parallel between a woman who essentially was taking part in a coup and getting shot, and a woman who was asleep in her bed where the police broke into the wrong house and killed her in her bed, is just flat out delusional. But when you draw those parallels between the Black Lives Matter protest and all of that, one, you have to look at the fact that the Black Lives Matter protests were coming off the heels of people getting killed, like not long after those people got killed and nothing was done. And if you ask them what their end game was, it was to see consequences for the officers who perpetrated it, and also to get some kind of dialogue going about the necessary changes needed for police reform and how they interact with the communities. If you were to ask any of those rioters what their purpose was, it wasn't to get more money in a stimulus check. It wasn't to make sure that they were remembered. It wasn't to make sure that pandemic restrictions were loosened. It was to change the results, period. That is the only reason they were in D.C. That is the only reason they were listening to Trump talk. And that is the only reason why they went down, period. There is no gray area. This was a black and white issue for them. The election was stolen. We need to do something about it. That's it. There's no room for, well, what about this? Or what? No. This isn't like the Kaepernick thing where you're going to give 20 different explanations for this BS. They were there to change the result, period. I don't want to hear anything else. You can't, like, we watched this stuff. There is video of those rioters beating on one of the cops who ended up dying. Like, this is the law and order. And they killed two cops.
Yeah. And so we can get to the, because we only got about like 15 minutes left. So we can get to the aftermath part. I told somebody today, I'm not looking to blame anybody at this point. Granted, we have spent most of the show talking about how Trump's role, like the role Trump played in this. But at the end of the day, I just want people to be held accountable. Now, Lindsey Graham went on Fox News not too long after what took place at Capitol Hill. And he had this to say, and I specifically took like this conversation because I wanted to talk about it, because I feel like this is the sentiment of many people right now. So listen to what Lindsey said to Sean Hannity.
I stand by my vote, but now tonight I'm calling on President-elect Biden to pick up the phone and call Nancy Pelosi and the squad to end the second impeachment. President Trump gave a statement last night that was helpful. It hit the mark. He wants to move on to a peaceful transfer of power. He wants this to end. I've been with him most of the day. He's going to focus on his agenda, his successes for the American people in the next few days. But Joe Biden said it's up to Congress regarding impeachment. No, President-elect Biden, it's up to you. Pick up the phone, call Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the squad and tell them, stand down. This will destroy the country even further. You have the power to do that. The question is, do you have the courage to do it? I told my supporters at home, the President of the United States, who I admire and supported, that it was time to move on. It was over. I'm asking no more of you, President-elect Biden, than I ask of myself. Pick up the phone and tell Pelosi, Schumer, and the squad to stand down. No more impeachments.
Isn't he like the worst of the worst when it comes to this politician stuff? I've seen Lindsey Graham switch sides at least 4 times in the last week. It's absolutely ridiculous. So my thoughts on that, and I know it's probably not the most popular opinion, but this ain't Joe Biden's problem yet. It's Joe Biden's problem after he gets elected, or after he's officially sworn in. I'm sorry. I mean, but think about what this man just said. Trump and his people, Lindsey Graham's one of them, has spent the last 4 years talking cash money on the squad and Nancy Pelosi. They've made them villains in the eyes of over 70 million people. And now you're asking these people to put an end to this problem that you've created. And like I told somebody today, if Biden got on TV and pleaded to Nancy Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi was like, okay, fine, we'll drop it, you're still going to have the same tension because people view them as enemies, because that's what Donald Trump has built his campaign, his administration, and his entire political existence on, the radical left. And every time he says radical left or mentions it, he talks about Chuck, he talks about Nancy, and then he makes fun of Sleepy Joe, Sleepy Eye Biden, and Sleepy Joe Biden, this and that. Like, it's honestly, at this point, it's too far gone. And I know we had a private conversation about impeachment, and you know, I think you're more in support of it than I am, but I don't know if there's a way to sweep this under the rug in the sense that the Republican Party doesn't get held accountable to some extent, or Donald Trump doesn't get held accountable to some extent, because what just happened was potentially extremely dangerous. And it doesn't have to necessarily be Trump. It doesn't have to be the Republican Party. This could have been Barack Obama. It could have been Hillary Clinton. If they hadn't started something like this, once again, it would have been extremely dangerous. And we can't go forward as a country to heal when the guy gets on TV, says he wants to do a peaceful transfer of power, and then turns around less than 24 hours later and goes back on Twitter and starts talking crazy again. Like, what are
he I was going to say, first off, Lindsey Graham is – he can go fuck himself. I'm sorry. Like, this is – the fact that he is even taking that stand – I understand why he says it on Fox News, because he's got to play to the people who he's on his knees in front of. But you know what? Trump put his life at stake too. He put all their lives at stake. And the fact that he's going out, he goes, listen, he's calmed down. He's committed to a peaceful transition. No. Where was that stand when he was inciting that stuff right out? Like, you. He did not even take a strong stance against that stuff until those guys literally broke into them. Because like everyone else, and I think there was somebody who had talked about it, is that this whole thing and the whole stance of objecting to Biden's certification was for their own private political ambitions and for their own private political theater. So for him to come out now, after there were real tangible consequences to what Trump said, and to now automatically say, okay, well, you know, he's really sorry. You know, he promises that he's going to be a good boy and try to, like, no. This cannot go unchallenged. That is absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. And as far as impeachment, further dividing America, there were armed people who showed up at the State House in Kentucky calling for Mitch McConnell and calling for an overturn of the election. That impeachment isn't going to further divide people or further incite people. They're already incited. They're incited and they're enabled by what they saw on Wednesday. Trump did serious, serious damage by doing that. And what he's trying to do now is get himself in a position where he'll face the least amount of consequences. and that cannot fly. It can't. If this Congress wants to show anything and wants to deter anybody from doing this in the future, that's what needs to happen. And I've talked with people about this, and I've heard people say it. The dangerous thing about the court cases that Trump ran to overturn a lot of those votes and all the steps that he took, as comical and inept and absolutely buffoonish as they look, they're still dangerous nonetheless, because they show a roadmap for anybody who's willing to do the same thing, who's craftier, who's subtler, and who's a much better politician than him, to actually do if they ever want to try to undermine an election of their own that's a hell of a lot closer. And it's the same thing with them. What the message that I personally think it sends, if they don't move forward with impeachment, is that if you pull off a coup attempt close enough to the time that you're supposed to leave office, they're just going to let it go anyway in the hope of pacification. That's the message I think it sends, and that is not the message that needs to be sent right now. Right now, you're starting to see small things come around. The PGA Tour removed the tour championship that was supposed to be scheduled for one of his golf courses. Parler, that conservative site, is being removed as an app option on Apple and Google. There are now being more steps taken for a lot of that stuff to come down on it, because now it's already shown how volatile it actually is. That stuff needs to continue, because this was not another normal one of his rallies. This was something where more people were almost effing killed because of it.
So I struggle with it. A part of me thinks that it's a waste of time. However, having had to sit through so many constitutional law classes, I figured the political angle of the impeachment process for the Democrats would be to ensure that he cannot run for office again in any capacity. And Nancy Pelosi pretty much confirmed that today on 60 Minutes. I was just reading about it before we got on. So in that particular sense, if they're going to, because they can't actually start the process until after the inauguration, but if they want to submit to basically doing that after the 100 days of Biden is up, it's unfortunate that Joe Biden has to deal with that. But in that case, I feel like that would be an appropriate punishment for what happened. We don't need to, I mean, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, those are separate entities. That's fine. They can do what they want to do with their platforms. But as far as the federal government goes, I think if we're going to do a punishment, I think the fitting punishment would be to basically keep him from holding office of any federal position in the future. Now, the reason why I say I struggle with that is because this is the type of attention that I think he ultimately wants, because it gives him more claim to his notion that everybody's out to get him. The radical left, they want to silence his voice, and because he represents his base, or he speaks for his people, if they silence him, they're trying to silence them too. There's too many poor people that relate to Trump for some reason, and it's kind of scary. But they really think that, you know, attacks on him or people like the media coming after him is also coming after them. And that's what makes this kind of a delicate, dangerous position. And I'm 100% sure that the majority of Joe Biden's tenure as president is going to be focused on trying to get this country back together, in the sense that, I mean, obviously we were never 100% together, but restoring like confidence and faith in the process, in the establishment, you know, I think is at an all-time low, and it's going to be hard to do that, but he's going to need some help from across the aisle. And it might just be one of those things where you have to be the bigger man in this position if you're the Democrats, and save face by kind of conceding a little and not going for it with impeachment. I think it's going to be a really delicate balancing act how they handle this. I personally would like to see them, like I sent you in the text, do more of a legislative initiative to kind of prevent something like this from happening again, or maybe have more immediate consequences for something like this. But tomorrow's a big day. Nancy Pelosi basically said that they're going to give Mike Pence a chance to enact the 25th Amendment. He's got 24 hours, and if he doesn't do that, then they're going to go forward with the impeachment process. And as we noted, Democrats control the Senate, and if they go forward with the impeachment process, they control the House too. There's a lot of people, honestly, there's a lot of people that are not happy about this on both sides, actually. And we know the majority of Democrats are going to support it. And if they got 50, I mean, there's a significant amount of Republicans that are for it too. And essentially it would be a win-win, because I don't think Republicans really want him in the party anymore. I really don't.
Well,
he's
overtaken it. But here's the counter to what you're saying, because I totally get where you're coming from with this idea of being able to concede certain things to get, to at least get, not necessarily back in the good graces, but maybe get some goodwill. But the thing is, we're past all that. We're past anything. Like, the people who are going to be the angriest by the impeachment are the same people who already have been showing up to state capitals with guns. You know, we are already so far beyond that point because we keep being so forgiving of a lot of those people and willing to not push boundaries with them. And I think that it has to stop at a certain point. There has to be a point where we draw a firm line, because the more we enable it, the more dangerous it becomes. Trump has already pushed this, as we saw on Wednesday. He pushed it past the point of violence. He and his son and Giuliani and the congressman from North Carolina, who was, they incited that crowd and they pushed them to the point of violence. And whether or not that was their intention to get it to go that far is irrelevant. We've crossed the point of no return with this. So we're already at that point. What is impeachment going to do? Impeachment, they've already been thinking that they were out to get Trump from the beginning. And now, at least for most of the Republicans who are going to be pissed off about this, it's like, I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like, we are so far beyond the point of violence at this point, where it's like, who cares? Like, they're already insane. If Trump, if nothing happens to Trump, you know, if he doesn't get impeached and he does leave peaceably on the 20th, he's going to go right back to the rallies that he was holding, and he's going to be spouting the same type of rhetoric. And who is to say he's not going to incite another crowd again? You know, he's already shown he can do it, and he's already and they've already been demonstrating that there are people within there who are willing to follow him if he gives that order. So, I mean, as you said, we might as well take the steps to at least do something to show, hey, man, this is not acceptable. Like, there should be charges, but like, this was a dangerous thing that he incited. You know, we're well beyond, you know, I think this point where it's like, well, maybe we need to start working with these people. Why? I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I want to see, some kind of cooperation, but I also have the counterpoint. We're going to reach across the aisle and we're going to cooperate with a section of people who have literally shown that they are willing to undercut everything in the oath that they swore to uphold. I mean, we're going to work with those people because they would work with us if the roles were reversed.
Oh, they definitely wouldn't work with them. But that's why I was saying, like, honestly, it puts Biden in a lose-lose situation. I mean, I think this is the moment where diplomacy is extremely key, you know? And to Joe Biden's credit, the one thing that most people probably would know him for is the fact that he's not afraid of stepping on his party's toes, you know, in the for the sake of diplomacy or crossing the aisle. But it's a tough task, man. And I know I talk to people on a regular basis who are Trump supporters and things like that, and they almost get like too happy at the thought that this is what Biden is inheriting, and they say things like, oh, well, maybe he'll make it better. And I'm thinking to myself, like, he can't make it better. Like, this, his whole presidency is already undermined to the point where half the country doesn't believe that he's actually a legitimate president. So it's going to be hard to really get anything done or any support from, and, I think in order for him to really build that bridge, he's going to have to lean on his fellow congressmen and women, and he's going to have to start right there in D.C. and see if they can't maybe change it and make them do the groundwork. Because, again, having him hold rallies or speak to the nation and they already hate him, I don't think that's going to work. So I really think he's gotta reach across the aisle and get something done. And unfortunately, the biggest thing he could do is to more or less forgive Trump for what he did. And I know that sounds ridiculous and it seems like he's getting away with it, but I'm thinking big picture for the country, because this is something that could really go on for a very long time as far as the repercussions of the undermining of the election and things like that. So I think the focus for his administration should be to try to build that confidence back. Now, with that being said, I don't have a lot of faith in the general public. I don't think they're very intelligent. So I feel like impeachment has, like, that's the trigger word, and people know it, and it's obviously not a good thing. So if you go that route, you're going to get more pushback than if you honestly do a bipartisan legislation on basically the idea that a political figure incites an insurrection or something like that. I don't know. I mean, we have treason, but, like, obviously you can't prove that, but maybe something a little under that. Just word it in a way that if this were to happen again, people would be held accountable, and not just Trump. Because again, if we had time, I would definitely go over the entire speech. And in my mind, Trump wasn't the worst one in the entire speech, but that people understand that this cannot happen, period, again. And the judges who get these people who've been arrested need to make an example out of them that this can't happen again. There are people who stole laptops and official government property out of these offices. So yeah, you got to make an example out of them. You know, I think that's the only way to go about it, man.
And at least that part, I would definitely agree on that. If they don't go forward with impeachment, then there needs to be severe criminal penalties. And there have been a lot of arrests that have been made, and I think that a lot of these supporters are getting a bit of a wake-up call when they're starting to realize what exactly it is they're facing. Because like I told you with the Les Miserables analogy, they believe themselves to be the heroes, the voices of the downtrodden and the people. And it's like, A, you're not, because the majority of the people voted for the other guy. So you're not speaking for the majority. And you are not the hero. Like, there was one woman who, at least was when she was talking about the shooting that took place, she was so shocked that they were shooting at patriots. Like, they think of themselves in the same light that they think of, like, the Boston Tea Party and the guys at Bunker Hill and Lexington and Concord. It's like, that's not who – no, this is like that Confederate crap all over again. You know, the people who think that the Confederates were actually patriots. Like, no, they were trying to form a separate country. That's the opposite of a patriot. Yep. You know, you guys were trying to overthrow or throw out the results of a legitimate democratic election. You're not heroes. You're the villains in that story.
So we will see what's going to happen tomorrow, and I'm not going to try to I really should keep my mouth shut, but we'll be back next week. I'm not sure if we'll do it before the inauguration or after the inauguration. I will say I have a lot of concerns about the inauguration, man, and what could possibly happen. And I just hope that it goes smoothly and that people stay safe. As much as I've made comments like this ain't really a black problem, it's a white problem and things like that this week, I will say that a loss of life is always tragic no matter what. So the young lady that was shot by coming through the window, the officer who died because of the actions of the protesters or mob, whatever you want to call them, all that, at the end of the day, is all tragic. And it was something that could have been prevented, and it's something that I hope to never see again and hope that people will take measures to ensure that it doesn't happen again. And at the end of the day, we're here. This is America. We live together. It ain't the best country in the world, even though people think it is. It's got the best opportunity, but that doesn't make it the best place. And regardless of what our president might think, in his 4 years, it really hasn't gotten any better as a place for the people here, unless you're a certain way. And I'm not saying as white or black, but I'm just saying it just depends on your perspective. And so I would like to see us try to work together more. And I think it, again, it's going to start with Joe Biden and his administration. And unfortunately, they're just in a position where I really think they're going to have to make some concessions to appease this other 77 million and not like start this cycle of ridiculous, unnecessary hatred towards one another over again. Because the two-party system is essentially tearing the country apart, and it's about to be a three-party system, if we're being honest, because, like I said, there's a lot going on in the Republican Party, man, and it's not all good. It's not all good. So we will see how that plays out. Paul, thank you, man. I told you I wouldn't keep you over an hour. I kept you like an hour and 5 minutes, so I apologize. But
real quick, I was going to say real quick, yeah. Shout-out to go, at least for the hopes for the future. Cleveland Browns win their first playoff game since 94. So, you know, maybe that's
the future. If anything, it's the end of days. We got the Browns winning a playoff game. It was snowing in Texas. It's the end of days, man. But, yeah, just be on the lookout, man. I'll hit you up. Again, everybody who listens, thank you guys for listening. I have been getting some pretty positive feedback on the show, and we'll continue to try to be as moderate as we can in the middle, even though people call me a liberal, which I find to be funny. My Republican friends think I'm a liberal. My liberal friends think I'm a Republican. So, again, I consider that to be right where I want to be. All right, so thanks again, Paul. This has been the Mod Pod. This is our 9th episode. We will be back probably next week, depending on the impeachment process. And then also, obviously, we will have our live reaction or reactions from the inauguration.